Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which you can visit at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host, Jasper. Kareem Saeed is here, and on this episode, we will be reviewing Haywire, Steven Soderbergh's new semi-experimental chase thriller that casts MMA fighter Gina Carano as a covert ops agent who turns the tables on the men who framed her for murder. This leads to lots of sound effects like these. So, Kareem, I'm going to run through some movie titles here. I'm going to say Shark Night, Dream House, Real Steel, In Time, Jack and Jill, New Year's Eve, and finally, The Devil Inside. Can you tell me what those movies have in common?
We've scorned them all.
Yes. Now, we're about to do a Scorncast on Haywire, which is a little bit different than all of these movies in that I did not really have to twist your arm to see Haywire like I did with these other seven movies.
Was I opposed to all the others?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. But,
yeah, you didn't have to really be talked into Haywire as much as you did the other one. I didn't have to sell you on Haywire as much as I did the other ones.
No, I was genuinely interested in seeing it.
Here's my question for you. How did that turn out for you?
I actually didn't think it was horrible. I actually did think it had some really cool redeeming qualities, and I enjoyed it. On the whole, I would say I thought it was an okay movie without giving it a grade, because we'll do that at the end.
I guess there's no real way to jump off talking about Haywire without first discussing its lead actress, Gina Carano. Do you know if that's how you say her name?
Serrano?
Is it Serrano?
Is that like a pepper? Like a Serrano pepper? I actually have no idea.
Oh, I thought you were like, no, it is Serrano.
No, I'm sorry. I have no idea. I was not even aware that that was her name.
Yeah, well, neither of us watch MMA fighting, so it's not that surprising that we probably wouldn't know how to pronounce her name, right?
She's an MMA fighter.
She's an MMA fighter. She was also on the reboot from a couple years ago of American Gladiators.
Really?
Yes, she was Crush on American Gladiators. So
that's a good name.
Yeah, I mean, probably named for her thighs and what they can do to your head.
I thought it was because she loved orange soda.
Well, that was like when they started getting weirdly like all the synergy, like later on in the later seasons before it got canceled.
Oh, okay.
Steven Soderbergh directed this movie, and I guess we'll talk more about him later, but he, from what I understand, sort of came up with the idea to make this movie flipping the channels one night and seeing a couple minutes of her fighting in an MMA fight.
Uh-huh.
I guess he has the clout to be able to say, I'd like to turn this into a movie.
So I actually pulled up her Wikipedia page, and in addition to Crush, she had another American Gladiator name too.
Oh, she did?
Yeah. Do you want to guess what it is?
Thwap?
That would be better, actually. No, the other name is Conviction.
Oh, see, I don't like American Gladiators when they go beyond, like, monosyllabic.
Yeah, I know. Conviction, that's a weak name.
It sounds like if she was the religious American Gladiator, that would be an okay name for her.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she has all these crosses on her.
If she was, like, a professional wrestler that was a nun, like, that
yeah.
kind of thing.
She basically just had, like, a smoking, really hard body, and, like, she had, like, the wrestler spandex, and then she had, like, a nun's habit over her head.
Right. And she said things like, I'm going to drop you like a bad habit.
Oh, that's good. That's way better than what I had, like, the power of Christ compels you. Because that's what she sounds like.
That's actually a dead-on impression of her voice.
Well, let's talk about her voice really quickly, because this performance did not work for me at all. And I think that was one of the reasons why I had such a hard time with this movie, because every time she spoke, which is more than I would like, and I feel like that's a weirdly almost unfeminist thing to say, get back in the kitchen. But like,
well, it's not because she's a woman, it's because she's a poor actress.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when Steven Soderbergh saw this MMA fight and was like, I could build an action movie around this, that's not an awful idea. But the problem is, you can't really build a movie around one character without them talking frequently.
Right.
And every time she opens her mouth, it was just, nothing good came out of that, I didn't think. But one of the things that I wrote down was how weird to me her voice sounded. And I wrote down that she sounded like a weird mix of like Linda Fiorentino and Laura San Giacomo. And then I find out after the movie is over, I was looking up a couple things online.
She's actually their daughter.
Yes. Yes. Two women somehow had a baby together.
Yeah.
Republicans are just in awe right now. They're reversing their positioning on same-sex marriage. It's crazy.
But they're boycotting Haywire.
Yes. Well,
breaking news. Everybody across the country, Republicans are boycotting Haywire.
Yes, and I'm joining that picket line. No. It's weird because every time she spoke in this movie, I thought her line delivery to me was really weird. I mean, how did you feel about her manner of speaking? It just seemed very like weirdly stilted and robotic to me. Did you get that?
So she's not like an actress, right?
Sure, right.
So she's a fighter. And so I think she tried really hard to resist the urge of anybody who isn't an actor who is suddenly in an acting role. So she didn't want to overact.
Sure, yeah.
And so she underplayed everything.
Yeah.
And so everything was underacted.
Yeah, but here's the weird part about it. Apparently, like right before the movie was released, she was on an MMA podcast. And of course, she's an MMA fighter, so that makes sense. And MMA, for people who don't know, is mixed martial arts. And one of the things she was talking about on there, I guess people had noticed, people who were more familiar with her as like Gina Carano, MMA fighter, people were saying, you know, your voice sounds very strange in this movie on the commercials and the clips and stuff. And her thing was, well, they sort of dubbed my voice over, like they electronically enhanced it. And it's something that people are like, I guess they can't tell if she's saying that they dubbed her completely, her whole role, or they just got her in the recording studio and had her like do her lines over and then they adjusted them somehow, like the electronic pitch or whatever. It's weird because a lot of people online are sort of wondering if her voice was dubbed over by Laura San Giacomo, who Steven Soderbergh worked with many years ago in a movie called Sex, Lies, and Videotape. People might remember her. She doesn't really act so much anymore, but people would probably remember her from that movie. She was also in the TV movie based on Stephen King's The Stand that came out in the 90s, and she was on a sitcom called Just Shoot Me. She has a very distinct sort of like husky voice.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so in movies, they always dub voices. So like, depending on how the shot is done or whatever, usually you have to record the voices afterwards and then kind of put them in there. And I did notice that in the scenes where that was obviously happening, it wasn't done very well.
Yeah.
They didn't try to like mix it into the ambient sound or anything. So it did sound very much just like people talking over a video recording.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think maybe more than anything else, it was just her trying not to be overacting, and maybe she overcompensated.
They loop movies a lot. I mean, anytime they have like environmental factors like wind where they can't pick up audio correctly,
right,
they'll go back and loop the dialogue in. But for me, like this whole performance seemed looped at the time, and now I find out that it might have actually been looped. I wonder if, you know, Steven Soderbergh, apparently, according to what Gina Carano was saying on this podcast, Soderbergh was doing this so he could have a distinct character that wasn't Gina Carano. Like, I guess for the fans of hers that would come to see this movie, they would be able to separate the Gina Carano persona from this character that she's playing. And you can't see because this is a podcast, but I'm using finger quotes when I say playing. And I just wonder if that's the case or if just her performance was not necessarily what he wanted after, you know, he, I guess, set this movie up around her. And then he had another actress come in and record over her lines to at least save the delivery part of it. But still, like her facial expressions when she's talking to the other actors, she has very dead eyes.
Yeah, like a flat expression.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, appropriate for the character, maybe?
Or maybe.
Or just poor acting?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I can see both. And I don't think she was the worst, you know, athlete turned actor. I mean, you know, there were moments where she really worked, but most of them were when she was doing something athletic. I mean, certainly this woman has, I think she has a screen presence.
Yeah.
And it helps that this is a movie that's sort of along the lines of these things like Salt and Columbiana, things that came out recently where it's like a female-driven spy action movie kind of thing.
Sure.
And she looks like she is capable of beating the shit out of her on-screen antagonists, whereas like Angelina Jolie and Zoe Saldana, you know, you can like them as much as you want as actresses, but they have very skinny arms.
Yeah, yeah, no, this girl is definitely built.
Yeah, and the weird part about it is I found out after the fact also, she is 5'8 and roughly about 140 pounds.
She's my dimensions. Actually, she's like a half inch taller than me.
I was going to say, if you, like, just made me a little bit less soft around the middle, she would basically be me. Well, if you put a lot more muscle on me, I guess.
Which, and honestly, and she's, like, my age as well. She's only, like, a few months older than me. I would date this girl, given the opportunity. I would live every day of our romantic life in fear of death.
you would never cross her.
No.
I was about to say you would never scorn her, but I guess that's off the table right now.
Yeah, I guess my chances of dating Serrano Pepper is pretty low at this point.
I found the whole performance actually reminded me of something. I have to mention it really quickly. There's a movie that I think you can get on Netflix. I think that's how I saw it, called The Truth About Love. It's a movie from like 2005. And Jennifer Love Hewitt, everybody's favorite ghost whisperer, is the lead character in it. And it's set in the UK, and she plays a British woman.
Uh-huh.
Please, if you're listening to this, check this movie out. It is hilarious. It is the weirdest movie you will ever see. It's like a romantic comedy where she's having marital problems with her husband, and she's trying to spice up their love life by like leaving sexy phone messages for him on his voicemail. But the weird part about this movie, The Truth About Love, is that Jennifer Love Hewitt's voice in it, I guess she did a really horrible British accent while they were shooting it, so they had some other actors come in and record over all of her dialogue. But the weird part is, like, the actress's sort of throatiness doesn't match Jennifer Love Hewitt at all.
Oh, no.
So the whole thing is just completely fucking bonkers. And there's definitely, like, a scene where she's, like, leaving this sexy message for her husband, and she's like, I'm now touching my nipples. But, like, it's, like... I wish, you know, there probably are scenes of it on YouTube.
The only thing I know about Jennifer Love Hewitt is that back when she was on Party of Five, she always wore sweaters that were, like, the arms were way too long for her.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing I know. Like, it always seemed like there were a couple of inches of fabric past her hands.
It was really handy when you would dust.
Yeah. Or if you had a runny nose.
Oh, God. That's horrible. Or if you were ghost whispering and you wanted to, like, mute it a little bit, so you just, like, put all the excess fabric over your mouth and then ghost whisper so you wouldn't, like, disturb anybody in the house. Because, you know, that ghost whispering really wakes people up.
Welcome to Party of Five Cast.
The cast whisperer?
Cast whisperer.
Yeah, we'll do...
That's just haywire.
Well, I mean, here's the other thing. The movie is called Haywire.
It is.
This is one of the most sedate movies with such an exciting, like, ejaculatory title ever, right?
No, that's actually a really good point, because the entire movie is very subdued and very calm. Even the fight scenes, which I actually think are one of the strongest points in the movie, are the fight scenes, which they're fantastically choreographed and they're shot really well. They're not shot with, like, the jumpy cam. You can actually see everything that's going on very clearly. But everything is done almost as if you have, like, earmuffs on. Like, everything is just really subdued and quiet.
Yeah, I think Steven Soderbergh in general has these very clinical approaches to his movies. I don't know, like, Aaron Brockovich might be an anomaly, and that might be just because of Julia Roberts' performance in that movie. Who knows if he had, like, another actress in that role that wasn't as, like, ever sunny as Julia Roberts, if that movie would have been less, you know, bright and upbeat. But even this movie that he made last year called Contagion, it's about, like, a virus that sweeps through the nation and kills a bunch of celebrities. Well, celebrities playing characters, not just, like, celebrity Death Flu the movie. I would go see Celebrity Death Flu the movie, by the way.
I would absolutely see Celebrity Death Flu.
See, and that's another one I wouldn't have to, like, twist your arm to see. But in that movie, you know, everything is very cold and clinical. Even, like, going back to Traffic, which is the movie that he won the Best Director Oscar for. And I kind of like that approach, but it's very strange in this movie. The fight scenes, like you said, are pretty great. And then everything in between the fight scenes is very staid. Like, just kind of removed. I didn't really get into these scenes where people are sitting around in, like, government rooms and talking to each other about plots and scheming, you know. And I guess it doesn't help that Gina Carano, not to keep coming back to this poor woman, is, you know, talking her way through, like, the plot and trying to figure out what's going on. We should probably set this movie up. She plays Mallory Kane. I think that's cute, just because most everyone over the age of 30 who sees this movie will immediately think of Family Ties. It's just one of those instant association names, Mallory. I could think of was Justine Bateman. You're not over 30 yet, so Family Ties was the sitcom that was on a long time ago. I'm just letting you know.
I know what Family Ties is.
Oh, okay. She is, I guess, like a contract operative for this secret agency that's taken in by the government and they order her to do this job in Barcelona.
Right. Her organization is like a Blackwater type of company where mm-hmm. they do like mercenary type work for the government, I guess.
And on her team is Channing Tatum.
Right.
Another really dynamic screen presence. And they're busting this prisoner out. There's a chase sequence. You know, they rescue this guy.
They were just trying to save him from his captors.
Yeah, they were turning him over to, like, their employers.
Right, or something.
Antonio Banderas is, like, one of them. And then Michael Douglas is another one. And I guess that's where her casting, God, I keep coming back to this. Her casting really kind of doesn't work because Soderbergh fills this movie with legit people around her and Channing Tatum. sorry, Channing. But people like Michael Fassbender and Ewan McGregor and Bill Paxton and Antonio Banderas and Michael Douglas. You know, if you're an MMA fighter in a scene with them and your voice is dubbed by possibly somebody from a sitcom a long time ago, like it's right. just it's gonna look weird. The whole package is gonna look kind of odd.
It is a little strange that you have all these really good ostensibly actors around a total noob.
So it's basically one of those general spy movie setups where she realizes that nothing was what it seemed when she was on that job, and she's framed for this murder, and she has to go on the run and prove her name. And let's talk about the framing device of this movie, which I thought was kind of odd. Basically, the movie begins with her in a diner in upstate New York, and Channing Tatum shows up and starts talking to her about their employer, and then they start beating the shit out of each other, and she goes on the run with sort of a hostage who's kind of willing, played by Michael Angarano. And the movie is sort of set up in that they're driving to escape the feds who are on their tail. And she's recounting the story of everything that she's been through to him for no real reason at all, right?
Well, so I think the idea there was that eventually she was going to drop him off and he was going to kind of tell her story to other people because she, I guess, anticipated eventually having to disappear or eventually getting caught or whatever. And she wanted the information to at least be with somebody else. That's what I got from it.
The whole framing device to me seemed like one of those episodes of like an 80s sitcom where somebody would get amnesia and then they would need to be reminded of who they were with like clips from previous episodes.
Right.
And I did like how at the very end, when it finally catches up to the framing device, like the story that she's telling him catches up, it cuts back to them in the car and she's like, and then I met you.
Right.
And that's actually a line from the movie. Like, right. I didn't make that up. And she also says, after one chase where they're in the car and they're trying to outrun some, I think, policemen that are after them, she says, whoops, more Leos, in like the deadest way possible. And Michael Angarano is like, Leos? And she's like, yeah, law enforcement officers.
Right.
It's very strange.
That was a really bad delivery. I think we both kind of like groaned.
But yet the fight scenes are good. She's good in the fight scenes.
The fight scenes are really excellent. I enjoyed them a lot. I wish more fight scenes were shot like that instead of the really jumbled style that a lot of them are shot in now.
Yeah, like the Bayfication, if I can use a word that I just made up a couple weeks ago in my worst movies of the year post.
Right, like where you can't really tell what's going on.
Yeah, it's not over-edited. They're shot generally in, like, wide shots where you can see the action. I mean, you can kind of tell that it's actually her fighting Michael Fassbender.
Mm-hmm.
The choreography is good. I mean, like, the thing with Michael Fassbender, she's undercover as his wife. She's posing as his wife in Dublin, I think, in a secret mission. But as soon as they walked into their really, like, swank hotel room, and you see, like, all these vases and all this china, like, in a shelf on the wall, I was like, all that shit is coming down.
Yeah.
It's kind of got like a 70s vibe to it, too, in terms of how the action is shot in those wide shots. There's like a lot of her running from place to place. She's chasing a guy in one scene, and it's just like a close-up on her running for almost too long it holds on her. But it did really make me realize that maybe if like I concentrated on my breathing more when I would work out, I'd do better. She's really good at breathing when she runs.
And she runs a lot in this movie.
She does. And as much as I didn't like her performance very much, I will say that when she was running, I really believed that she wanted to get from point A to point B.
She was really selling that running.
Did you like the run sequence where she's chasing after that guy who gets away because she doesn't like loose ends?
Oh my goodness. That was a tiresome and kind of confusing sequence. She pretty much runs across the entire city of Barcelona. I think they were in Barcelona at that point.
Yeah.
After this one nameless guy, I think he's one of the captors of the person that they were trying to rescue, and she chases this guy all over, and then she finally gets him, and she punches him a few times, and then traps him underneath a bay door, like in this little loading dock area, and then just walks away, and he gives her the finger, and then she gives him the finger back, and it's kind of a ha-ha moment. But why would you chase somebody across an entire city just to kind of punch them a few times?
Yeah, she makes the point that she doesn't like loose ends, but then, like, what is he at the end of the day but a really loose end?
Yeah, actually, if anything, he's more of a loose end, because now he's seen her, and he knows that she can fight well, and he has all this information on her.
Yeah.
I actually thought that it was a mistake in the movie, like, maybe they did shoot a scene where she kills him, and then they pulled it at the last minute or something, and forgot. But it didn't make a whole lot of sense, and it was kind of tiresome, because they were running for a long time.
Yeah,
it really was just, like, shots, like, of them running across the camera, and then, like, the camera would change position, and they would run across again.
Not scored with any music, either. The action sequences, the way that Soderbergh chooses to approach them in this movie, he doesn't, like we were saying, he doesn't use that Michael Bay editing style. He also doesn't underscore them, so you're hearing, like, all the thwacks, and all the punches, and everything. This movie should probably win some sort of award for its Foley artistry, right? Like all the sound effects and stuff.
It is, everything about the movie is kind of understated, which is neat. It's cool to see.
I think it makes the action sequences super interesting and the rest of the movie really slack. Yeah.
That's fair.
For all the ways that the fight scenes individually popped, the rest of it is just so uninvolving.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if an approach that was a little jazzier would have maybe helped that out, but...
Like maybe if there were some dance sequences?
Some dance fighting.
Ah.
There's no reason that she couldn't fight Michael Fassbender in like a dance club, you know, like with a disco ball, like on a chain.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Antonio Banderas's beard? It's very majestic.
It's luscious.
Yeah, I wondered if he was growing it out because in his next movie he's going to play a snow monkey.
Wait... That is a joke, right?
No, yeah, I hope so. But all I could think of whenever he was on screen, I was just look at his beard and I would think snow monkey.
I wasn't sure if maybe there was some weird movie.
You never know, really. But in the end of the movie, he has it shaved. He just has a mustache, which I thought was weird. Like, throughout this whole movie, he has this beard, and it's very distracting. But then in the final scene of the movie, he just has a mustache.
It is a very weird beard. Especially also because throughout the entire movie, he's sold as kind of this government person. He's a bureaucrat, essentially. But he has this really weird beard.
Yeah, although I guess the loss of the beard might be explained because in the very final scene of the movie, he is on this island, I think that's off the coast of Spain. So I guess you wouldn't want that giant beard if you're like in somewhere where the climate is sort of Mediterranean like that.
He just couldn't deal with the heat anymore.
Well, I mean, it was quite a beard. Let's just, our listeners who have not seen this movie, let's just, you know, we cannot overstate how impressive this beard was.
Go for the fight scenes. Stay for the beard.
Can we talk about Ewan McGregor?
Sure. He's her boss.
Yeah.
And also, like, they used to have a thing.
Yeah.
They mention it, but it doesn't really ever come into play. It
doesn't really affect anything at all. Yeah.
Right.
I guess it makes him more of a douchebag, considering that he wants to turn her into, like, a, you know, a patsy so that they can kill this guy and pass her off as the culprit.
Yeah.
But there's a scene early on in the movie, I think, when he's pitching this mission to her about going to Dublin and posing as this wife of this operative so they can pull off this secret mission. And he uses the word separatists. And I don't know if you noticed, I started shaking immediately in the theater because separatist is a word that's thrown around a whole lot in the Star Wars prequels.
Oh, is it?
And I really wanted him to also throw in a line there when he was talking to Mallory about their like past involvement and their past missions together, where he was like, I haven't felt you this tense since we fell into that nest of Gundogs together.
Oh,
so that would have been cool, right?
What else do I have here? I have, when did she find time to get cornrows?
Yeah, she just shows up in the movie, sort of hiding out in her father's house, waiting for, like, all the bad guys to convene there. Her father is played by Bill Paxton. But suddenly she has, like, cornrows, right?
So after she thwarts her assassin, or her hired assassin, Fassbender, she escapes back to the United States to rendezvous with her dad, who is kind of like a, I guess, an ex-military kind of guy.
Yeah.
And kind of helps her out when she's in a bind. And she lures her boss, who at this point is clearly the bad guy in the movie, to her dad's house, where she kind of does this whole home alone beat up the bad guys type of thing, and she randomly has cornrows out of nowhere.
Do cornrows take a long time to put in?
I mean, I've never had them before, but they seem kind of intricately knotted, so I'm gonna say yeah, they probably take a while.
I mean, I think we both know that there was that time in the 90s where you were really into the movie Set It Off, and you had cornrows.
that week aside.
You know? It was just a week. Wow, it seemed so much longer.
That was right after my kid and play phase, I had that high top fade.
I'm sad that Gina Carano didn't show up to her dad's house with one of those haircuts.
That would have been funny. Great. With, like, lightning bolt sideburns.
No, not like Elsa Lanchester. I was thinking she could put, like, foliage in it, and that would, like, help her blend in with, like, the bushes around her father's house even more.
Yeah, oh, maybe.
That'd be good.
We can talk about how the last line in this movie was improperly selected.
Oh, it was shit, right? Because in the end, doesn't she... It's very strange. She goes through all these guys and sort of dispatches all these people that were involved with setting her up. In the very end, you know, spoiler alert, she leaves Ewan McGregor for dead. I guess the tide is going to kill him, ostensibly, right?
Right. His leg is, like, trapped in between a rock, and he's kind of on the beach, so the water is rising, and I guess we're supposed to assume that he drowns.
Yeah, I don't like it when they do that, when, like, characters fall victim to their environment in movies like that.
Is there any chance for a sequel?
No.
No.
No. But in the end, the very last scene of the movie, like, Antonio Banderas is the only one who's left, I guess. And he's hiding out on this island off the coast of Spain. He's suddenly beardless. And she just shows up basically and, like, I think she just drops down behind him or whatever. And he turns around, and when he sees her, he's like, shit. And that's the last line of the movie. And that's the other thing, like, you know, at least have the conviction to follow through and have her kill everyone. I mean, she leaves Ewan McGregor for dead, and you never really find out what happens with Antonio Banderas. Maybe he has his, like, beard in his pocket and he throws it at her, and it's like an alien face hugger or something.
Now that is a twist that I would be happy with.
But you were saying the last line was inappropriate?
Yeah. Instead of shit, it should have been, that bitch is haywire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, you know, at least make some sort of effort to tie the title into it, since the movie is sort of lethargic overall, you know?
So the full sequence would be, he gives that line, and then the camera shoots over to her. It's like a close-up on her face. She kind of arches her eyebrow, and there's like a little twinkle, you know? Like an instrumental twinkle.
Yes.
And then the credits.
Giant fireballs, like giant CGI fireballs, like engulf her. And like the words, haywire, come like to the screen in like a Western kind of font. But when they do, a voice actually says, haywire.
Haywire.
Yeah.
I think if the movie had ended like that, and or there was some kind of beard in the pocket alien face hugger type of twist.
Yeah.
That would have bumped this movie up like a letter grade or two.
What if in the very end she like pulls out a gun after he's like, shit, and she shoots him and it hits him in the chest and he falls down. She thinks that he's dead. He like gets up and like dusts himself off, and then he looks at the camera and winks, and he pulls like the beard out of his pocket. And the beard is what like saved him from death. Like, she shot him in the beard that he had in his pocket.
And then he's like, that's one strong beard.
Haywire.
Haywire.
We should run Hollywood, basically, is what we're saying.
I'm blown away that we're not high-powered writers.
Exactly. Let's close the chapter on Haywire here. What grade would you give Haywire, since we have alluded to it earlier in the Scorncast?
I'll go B-.
I'm going to go C, you know, just because it was kind of a half and half movie for me.
I think if anything, other movies should just take a cue and do their fight scenes like they did in this movie.
Yeah.
And I would enjoy them a lot more.
And also have a character get shot in the magic beard.
That's actually a great ending for any movie.
You shot me in the beard. The magic beard.
Was that Gollum?
No, I would never impersonate Gollum knowingly. And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. If you're a repeat listener, thanks for sticking around. Or if you're a first-time listener and you like what you hear, there are 30-some episodes for you to catch up on, and roughly half of those are actually listenable. As always, you can check out PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, where you can leave us comments and subscribe to our posts, and you can also email us at scornpop@gmail.com. No shit. You see what I did there?